Welcome to the Listen for Life podcast with Genevieve Richardson. Genevieve is a speech-language pathologist rehabilitating adults with communication challenges after a stroke or due to a neurological impairment. Get equipped with knowledge from experts in the field and professionals you need to know. We'll hear stories and experiences from others who are navigating life with aphasia. So, put your earphones in and take a walk outside. This isn't just a podcast. This is a community, a resource, and a support system. We're in this together. Do life.
It's one thing that's a prog with my dog. He had teeth, so he had his teeth tucked on his dental. I think it was 10 that we removed. We took one apple tape of thing we would be, a number of things we like in a table. It's a table. We've got one people, things that are fun to look at. We're airplanes, and airplanes are all fun. Folks, that is fluent aphasia. That's just one example of a fluent aphasia. Want to learn more? Stay tuned for this episode. Welcome back to our series on understanding aphasia, where we unravel the complexities of the aphasia condition to help families navigate the challenges it presents. In our last episode, we discussed non-fluent aphasia, exploring how it affects communication with its hallmark feature of effortful, halting speech, despite having relatively good listening understanding. So today we shift our focus to another facet of aphasia that presents with a different set of challenges. We refer to it as fluent aphasia. Unlike non-fluent aphasia, where speech production is visibly strained, individuals with fluent aphasia can produce smooth and flowing speech. Yet this apparent fluency masks a profound struggle. The speech, while effortless, often lacks coherent meaning and is interspersed with incorrect words or entirely fabricated phrases. A critical aspect of this condition is the difficulty in conveying meaningful messages and a notable impairment in comprehension. This creates a significant challenge. Fluid speech gives an illusion of comprehension and accuracy. Think of it as if you were traveling to a foreign country and you don't speak the language, yet a local is talking to you as if you did, and it sure sounds right, and you're picking up clues and maybe fragments of words that make sense, but in all, you're not picking up the details. This is much like what a fluent aphasia can be like. It sounds normal. It's got that normal intonation, the pattern, the rhythm, the flow. The voice matches the facial expression, but the words that come out can be made up words. We call them neologisms in speech pathology, or they can be paraphasias, another term you might hear, especially if you're reading a report about your loved one who has aphasia. Paraphasias can come in different forms, but it all boils down to when you're listening, when you're the listener in front of the person with fluent aphasia, you may get the gist, but you are not going to get the details necessarily. As they recover and improve their ability to comprehend and understand what they're saying, where they develop again that ability to listen and process what they say, their speech will improve. So we want to talk today about fluent aphasia, and there's four fluent aphasias that we're going to go through. Not that labeling absolutely matters, but for those of you who have aphasia or a loved one with aphasia, you might hear these terms. You might even Google these terms. So we're going to get into it briefly. the four fluent aphasias, Wernicke's being the one that is most common. It's spelled with a W, Wernicke's, transcortical sensory, conduction, and anomic aphasia. So what is fluent aphasia? It is a category of aphasia where individuals can speak with normal fluency, rhythm, and intonation, but their speech can lack meaning and be filled with made-up words or substituted words. And it's a challenge for the listener interacting with a person with fluent aphasia. It takes a lot of energy to try and process and understand what they're saying. You might ask them something like, "How are you?" And they're going to respond in a paragraph. It's just because they get on this roll and they keep going. They don't necessarily realize that you asked a simple question that requires just a simple answer. And that's where that comprehension comes into play. So let's talk a little more specifics about the hallmarks of fluent aphasia. Flowing speech, word substitutions, usually poor listening comprehension, and yet their sentences can be grammatically correct but not have meaning. So recognizing a fluent versus a non-fluent aphasia for the family and the person with aphasia, it has implications for how you interact, the strategies used, and that's why I like to make a differentiation between non-fluent and fluent aphasias. Just as a side note, not every aphasia fits into one of these categories. Broadly, probably a fluent versus a non-fluent, but not every fluent aphasia falls into one of the four fluent aphasias. It's just a group of symptoms, a group of characteristics that kind of help us differentiate how one constellation of symptoms presents versus another one. So what might a spouse observe if their loved one has fluent aphasia? They might speak in long sentences, but it doesn't make much sense. There could be a whole bunch of frustration due to misunderstandings, both by the individual with aphasia as well as the spouse, because it's hard to get answers to something like a simple yes-no question. Do you want water? Would be a yes-no kind of question, where you would expect as the spouse a yes or no response. But again, you might get a paragraph level response and you still don't know what your person wants. Do they want water or do they not? Challenges with basic communication, following directions. Sometimes when your person has fluent aphasia, they may have other difficulties like not being able to sequence the steps for getting dressed in the morning or showering or doing small things around the house. And so how are you going to get through to this person who may not be able to listen and understand speech? And they may just be hyperverbal where they're just talking all the time and you've got to get them to stop, because when you're talking, you can't listen, right? Any of you who have kids of your own, or you've been around kids, if they're talking, they are not listening. And that's very common with this type of aphasia. Often with time, there comes social withdrawal. Whether it's, you know, as the couple together, they don't venture out anymore, or even between the two spouses, there's going to be a withdrawal if some of these symptoms don't get managed, if there's not recovery in the ability to listen and self-monitor speech and be able to answer simple questions, follow simple directions, these kinds of things. I will go back to the example of being in a foreign country with a language that you don't understand and people are talking to you as if you did understand. That's difficult. But what would we do in that kind of situation? We would supplement by pointing to things, by writing out maybe words, drawing a map, using gestures, facial expression when we're in a foreign country trying to maybe get directions, you know, from someone when we don't speak the same language. But it doesn't work that way with a fluent aphasia because of the comprehension issues. But not to say that this can't improve with consistent, good, smart therapy. It can. So, but I'm still, again, we are here comparing and contrasting non-fluent aphasia with fluent aphasia. So let's deep dive into the four different specific fluent aphasias. The first one we're going to talk about is Wernicke's aphasia, spelled with a W. Characteristics are impaired listening comprehension. They have difficulty understanding spoken language. Even simple words can be very difficult to understand. Fluent but meaningless speech, and they often come with poor self-awareness. They aren't able to what we call self-monitor. They don't realize it was a yes-no question and they gave a paragraph length response. So that is something that has to be addressed very specifically because we have to improve their self-awareness, because self-awareness means they can learn strategies and apply strategies. Often in the early days with a fluent aphasia, we have to get them to stop. And we have to sometimes literally teach them, what does this mean? You know, this is stop sign, like zip it, quiet, you know, whatever you have to do to get the point across. If you have a partner with fluent aphasia, do you remember what it was like in the early days? And then where are they now? So Wernicke's aphasia, impaired comprehension, fluent but meaningless speech, and poor self-awareness. So what are the expectations for therapy? Progress in therapy aims first at comprehension and stopping the flow of speech so that they can listen. And families should be trained to adopt strategies to simplify the message. Simplify the message you give, simplify the message that's coming back. You model what you want in response. Honey, did you want that double bacon cheeseburger with pickles and onions like you love to get all the time at Hop Dottie? That is not simple communication. That is very complex. It's too much, too many words. You didn't set up context. And they're not going to get it. So let's move on to transcortical sensory aphasia and how it differs from Wernicke's aphasia. With transcortical sensory aphasia, the person usually can repeat back what they hear. They can repeat words and phrases accurately, even though they might still have poor comprehension. Their speech can still stay fluent and meaningless. But it's this repeating back, which is very interesting. And it's something that a speech pathologist can capitalize on. If they start repeating it back, we try and make it more meaningful. Try and get whatever they're repeating back into a context to help work on comprehension. So what are the expectations for therapy then? We want to leverage that repetition ability, using it as a bridge to improve comprehension and communication. The third fluent aphasia is conduction aphasia. It is characterized by disrupted speech. They exhibit fluent speech, but it's interrupted by frequent pauses and corrections and attempts to find the right word, which is an improvement, right? Instead of just this hyper-fluent speech where they're just running over you and they don't stop, they don't understand the turn-taking part of communication. So with conduction aphasia, frequent pauses, corrections, and attempts to find the right word, and in that they are trying to connect their thought with the words, to verbally express themselves, to say what they're thinking. With conduction aphasia, folks often have impaired repetition. Unlike transcortical sensory aphasia, conduction aphasia is characterized by a difficulty in repeating phrases accurately. Parrots fly south. They're not going to be able to do it. They might get parts of the word, they might get some of the sounds, but they're not necessarily going to be able to repeat that back. Their comprehension is better with conduction aphasia. It's not as impaired as with transcortical sensory or with Wernicke's. And some spontaneous speech production. What that means, you know, hello, good morning, you know, Buster, stop barking. You know, some of the spontaneous speech in the moment might be relatively preserved. So what are some expectations for therapy with someone who has conduction aphasia? Therapy focuses on strategies to improve the phonological aspects of language. Whoa, what in the world is phonological? What does that mean? In simple terms, that means the sounds. Words are made of sounds. Every letter of the alphabet has a corresponding sound that when certain patterns of sounds are put together, those make words. So when we're working with conduction aphasia, we're going to be working on these sound combinations in words. We might need to use things like first sound cueing. Maybe they're having trouble calling the dog and the dog's name is Buster. We might start with buh. You know, once we've established that they are trying to call the dog whose name is Buster, and we know that, so we have this shared context, we know what the intent is, then the listener can help with the first sound, buh, and that might be enough to help the person with conduction aphasia get the word Buster out. Sometimes we have to do a whole syllable, buh, you know, we got to hit the B with a buh versus buh. It's a subtle difference, but we work on phonological cueing, the cueing with sounds, cueing with the sounds that the words are made up of. And we want to help with word finding and reducing the pauses and incorrect word substitutions. So we're trying to work on that flow of speech. Even though conduction aphasia is considered a fluent aphasia, if someone has these islands of struggle, islands of trying to correct the word, the listener is going to lose the message. If we're struggling, us being the listener, if we're talking with someone who has conduction aphasia and they're constantly struggling to find a word, even though they have parts of their sentence that is fluent, we very well may lose the context. We may lose what they're trying to get across to us. So in therapy, we have to work on increasing the fluency, helping them find their words, using strategies to achieve that. So the fourth fluent aphasia is anomic aphasia. And how does it differ from the other fluent aphasias? Anomic aphasia means there are persistent word finding issues. You know that tip of the tongue feeling when you're talking with someone, you're like, you know that thing, it's red and black and it's that cute little bug sometimes lands on you. Some people think they're lucky. Is it a ladybug? That difficulty coming up with the word. They might be able to describe it, but they can't always come up with the exact word that they want. So we have to work in therapy about word finding strategies. And there's lots of different ways to address that. We have to take the whole person into account because the person is a person before they have aphasia. Does that make sense? And then we have to look at their aphasia. We don't just want to slap a label on it and think that they fit in this hole, right? round peg, square hole, square peg, round hole. We don't want to do that. Our job as a speech pathologist is to really tease out what the strengths, what the weaknesses are. Maybe it lines up with a diagnosis of anomic aphasia, and maybe it doesn't. Maybe it just falls under fluent, and then we describe it in other terms. Anomic aphasia can have relatively preserved speech, meaning how they're saying things. It may come out pretty well, but with word finding issues, and they may have decent comprehension, which is very different from a Wernicke's or a transcortical sensory fluent aphasia. They typically have preserved comprehension and fluent speech with the exception of word finding challenges. So therapy with anomic aphasia is working very hard on word retrieval strategies. We do a technique called circumlocution, where we help individuals communicate more effectively by talking around the word, describing it in different ways. Like I just did that, you know, the insect, it's red, black spots, it flies, it lands on you, people think they're cute, you know, it's good luck, you know, it might, giving those kinds of cues might help the person with anomic aphasia. They can self-cue themselves by giving a description, and that might be enough for them to pull up their own word. But we have to teach them how to do it. It doesn't tend to come naturally to talk around or describe a word when we can't think of the exact word that we want. So by understanding that fluent aphasia, there's nuances within this category. Families, caregivers, the person with aphasia, they need to understand what are their strengths, what are their challenges. And then speech pathology can tailor the communication strategies and the therapeutic interventions, what we do in therapy. We are trained in, I have no idea, I couldn't even give you a number. There are so many different treatment methods, but we have to pair the treatment method with the preserved abilities of the person and what we're trying to get to. There's an art and a science with it. I definitely know that there is an art piece to speech pathology treatment. So we want to recognize the unique challenges and strengths associated with each of these fluent aphasias, because then we are working towards more meaningful connections. When we have a way to describe the aphasia to the family and the caregivers, then it makes much more sense. Education is so important for families and the person with aphasia to understand what to expect, how to help, how to work around situations and or set the situation up for success, so that we can have good communication, so we can send and receive messages as we intend to. So let's go over some tips for effective communication and understanding when you have fluent aphasia. Use simple, clear language. Keep it simple. Not one long run-on sentence. Break it into several parts and pause. So for the person with fluent aphasia, even though their speech might be fluent, their listening and understanding of what they hear may be significantly impaired. Use straightforward language, short sentences to improve understanding. Context, context, context. I can't say it enough. We have to know what we're talking about to help the person with fluent aphasia who has a comprehension problem. They're not listening. If you're going to talk about dressing, maybe not even dressing, picking out what you want to wear, or you're going somewhere and you want to give your loved one with fluent aphasia a choice, take them into the bedroom. Pull out the clothes. Say, honey, do you want this shirt or this shirt? lay out their choice on the bed and say, oh, that's a nice shirt. Let's pick out pants to go with the shirt. You want these pants or these pants? Do you get the gist? This is just one small, tiny example about context. If you're helping your loved one do self-care, brushing their teeth, brushing their hair, getting dressed, don't talk about dinner plans when they're getting dressed, because that destroys the context, right? If you're talking about food, do it in the kitchen, or pick up your phone. If you're going out to dinner tonight and you know the restaurant you're going to go to because you're meeting someone there, show them a picture of the restaurant. See if there's recognition. Talk about your favorite foods or those kinds of things. It's just really going to depend on their comprehension, what they are going to process. But that is a visual aid. The picture of the restaurant, showing them on a map. Sometimes simple pictures like that really will get through when words can't. Confirm understanding by regularly checking in if they've got it. If you're asking them to follow directions, give only one direction at a time and help them execute that step before giving them the second step. If you ask a question or you're giving information, you need to make sure they've got it. Be patient. You cannot rush a person with aphasia, and I don't care what aphasia they have. You cannot rush them. They need time to process. This will take some self-control and, you know, some real conscious thought on your part to speak slower, to give extra time, to pause. Focus on nonverbal and verbal cues. Pay attention to their facial expression. Read their body language. How are they reacting to you? Are they making a funny face like they don't get it? Or maybe they've got it, like you see the light bulb is on. And so you understand from their body language and facial expression, they might be getting it, or at least they have the same attention. They're tuned into you, whether or not they're comprehending. Encourage all forms of communication. You probably think it's weird to draw a picture, write a word, show the water bill if you're talking about bills, or you want to pick out a new plant and you're on Home Depot's website and you're showing this plant and this plant. You know, show pictures, give them words, draw pictures. See how it helps with their comprehension. You are going to know your person best. And if you don't know, you need to work with a speech pathologist who can help you decode to understand. So these are just some general communication strategies that are effective for folks who have fluent aphasia, but they also apply to all the aphasias. So last week, our previous episode, An Understanding Aphasia, we covered non-fluent aphasia, which is that effortful, halting speech. If they're speaking, they tend to leave out the little words, the articles like a and the. They usually won't use small verbs like is and have. They may do more things like labeling things like house, dinner, and then it's up to you, the listener, to ask follow-up questions to understand what it is they're communicating. Again, I am making a huge generalization here. I am not buttonholing anybody by saying that this is a standard. I'm just trying to give you a comparison between non-fluent and fluent. Fluent speech has the normal rhythm and flow, but it sounds like they're speaking in a foreign language, and there's often difficulty with listening comprehension. So as we wrap up this episode, it's clear that fluent aphasia is characterized by smooth but often meaningless speech, or with some of the other fluent aphasias, they have more word-finding difficulties that interrupt and interfere with that fluent type speech. The journey through understanding and adapting to fluent aphasia is one of continuous learning, compassion, and adaptation. So, this is our second of two episodes about understanding aphasia. I have many more episodes planned. We're not going to get too into the weeds of exactly each of these seven aphasias that we have, but we're going to get into some more of the nuances about communication and how you can cope, whether you're the person with aphasia or you're the family member or loved one caring, who cares and loves someone with aphasia. If this episode sparked any questions, or if there's anything you're wondering about, whether it's your aphasia or your loved one's aphasia, you can reach out to us. Life Speech Pathology is the private practice. You can reach our website at DoLifeSpeechPathology.com. Because when you have aphasia, it's all about getting back to doing life, right? If you have questions and insights, you have a story to share, we want to hear your story. Here on the podcast, we are about educating, informing, building a community, sharing examples, helping others help themselves. It's about empowerment and education and all that good stuff. If you are a survivor with aphasia and you would like to share your story, or you would like to come on the podcast with your significant other and share your story together, I would be honored to interview you. I'd be honored to meet with you and make an episode about your journey and what you've learned. Because what we do know with aphasia, it's complicated, right? Life is complicated when you have impaired language. So if you want to share your story, I would love to help you do that. Again, you have two ways. Well, you probably have more than two ways to reach me. DoLifeSpeechPathology.com, or if you would like to reach me through our podcast website, ListenForLifeAphasiaPodcast.com. You can reach me there. On there, you will see all of our episodes. I think this is episode 84. You can see all of our episodes. I have my staff working hard behind the scenes to organize the podcast episodes by category and by topic. And also, there's a really cool feature on that podcast website where you can get some questions answered about aphasia. I dare you to check it out. The website is still in progress, but it is good enough. You can get there today and start asking questions. Check out some of the other episodes. Thank you, thank you, thank you as always for being here, for listening to me. I hope you got some new information from this episode about fluent aphasia. Thank you for tuning in, and until next time, understanding evolves, recovery is redefined, and together we can uncomplicate aphasia. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Listen for Life podcast. We hope you feel empowered and supported. Head over to listenforlifepodcast.com to see the show notes with links and information from today's episode. Do you have a topic, a resource to share, or a guest recommendation? Inquiring minds want to know. Let us know in the comments section. Wishing you a fabulous week.